speaking today with Hugo Mojica, who is running for HISD trustee in District 1. Hugo, thank you for talking to me today. Why are you running for this office?
Sure, Charles, thank you for the opportunity to speak with you about why I'm running for HISD trustee District 1. I'm doing this because I have a passion for giving back for the community. So I'm doing this as an extension of my community, lifelong community volunteering. And I think we need a new effective leadership at the district.
Okay, now you ran for Houston City Council District H in the special election in 2009. Right. Mm-hmm. What would you say you learned from that experience?
At the city, I come from city government, so I know how the city council works and what the issues are at city council. So I learned to be more patient, I guess, in making change in terms of the campaigns. I think it was a great opportunity for me because I got to learn and got to see the whole district itself, District H, which, and it's changed a little bit. But I got to meet people, and I enjoy talking to speaking to people and talking about how we can improve our communities together. So,
okay. What do you see as the top priorities for the school district, and what would be your top priorities if you were elected?
Sure. For the biggest thing that I believe is missing in HISD is we don't provide equitable and quality public education for our kids. I think we just do it for a few kids, and I think that's the biggest issue that I have in HISD in general. And I think it's our responsibilities as trustees once we get elected to make sure that happens. So as the next trustee for District 1, I plan to do that. And I'm not just saying that we don't have an equal schools, we have inequalities in public schools. I've seen it. I've talked to parents, and they tell me the same issues over and over, where our neighborhood schools are losing students because we don't provide quality public education. So many of them see other alternatives to get a public education, and I think that's the main reason why charter schools exist, I think, because we're failing to have a quality public education in our public schools. And our goal as trustees should be to fund and to make sure that we provide the consistent leadership, first of all, which I think that's the biggest issue, and having the committee professionals, teachers, with their support, and, of course, having an engaged community and engaged parents. And I think the district has failed to meet those needs, especially in engaging parents.
Okay. The most important role that the board plays is, as the supervisor, if you will, of the superintendent, Dr. Terry Greer. And Dr. Greer is kind of I don't want to say divisive, but he's certainly someone that elicits strong opinions.
Right, right.
And in fact, on the board, there are those that tend to be in his corner and those that tend to be more challenging to him. What is your view of Dr. Greer's performance?
Right.
And, what's your view of
it? Let me be clear, because I sometimes during the campaign seasons, people try to define who you are without even asking what your opinion is. And I'm happy that you're actually asking what I believe. I think the problems in HISD have been created by this superintendent that hasn't engaged the community. So I don't think he's done a good job. So my position would be to actually replace both the superintendent and the current board.
The superintendent
and the current board members. We need to start fresh.
Okay. So, how would you go about replacing current board members?
I'm talking about the ones who are up for re-election. Three, to be specific, yes. There's three board members who are up and have a challenger, an opponent in the race. And I think it's time for us to start bringing new faces to deal with the problems of HISD. So, but I don't mean literally remove the other ones.
Okay, all right. Just wanted to get
electing new board members of those that have been challenged.
Probably Dr. Greer's signature program at this time is Apollo 20, which is geared towards improving the performance of students in some struggling schools.
Right.
What is your assessment of the Apollo 20 program and the possibilities of it being financially viable to scale up at HISD?
I believe that I think the Apollo program itself was launched without the community input. So I think it's failed to meet the goals that I think the superintendent had at the beginning. So, and it's worth discussing because we're talking about $56 million in 20 schools. And that $56 million, while I think it's a great investment, we need to invest it in different components of the Apollo program, which I support the tutoring section of it, or providing longer school dates. But I think that should be a district-wide issue, not shouldn't be on 20 schools spending $56 million. So I think to the point that the superintendent has failed to sell the program and doesn't have the backup, the data that reflects that it's been a successful program. That bothers me that we spent that kind of money on a program that hasn't worked.
You've mentioned community engagement a couple of times. What specifically do you think needs to be done, and what would you do to improve community engagement?
Well, and part of the things that I have to say, as I said at the beginning, was that when we do community engagement, we need to really do community engagement. Like, actually talking to parents and letting them know what the issues are. And the current administration has gone through two reshuffling of the parent engagement department. So when you do that and you don't have consistent leadership, it means that you're not really doing what you're supposed to be doing, which is engaging parents, informing and educating parents. So I think that's the first thing first, having consistent leadership that's going to go out and deliver what you're supposed to be doing, which is educating and informing parents. And so currently, I know the superintendent just reshuffled his administrative office. So now he has somebody, I know Michelle Pola, he appointed her as the community person there. And hopefully we can start talking about the issues of actually engaging parents. But currently the superintendent hasn't really done a decent job at engaging them. So, and I think that's part of many of the reasons why I think that he's having issues with this, because if you don't engage the community and the community doesn't understand what is it that you're trying to do to address the education problems, then you're kind of going against what everybody understands. And my thing for the Apollo program was that we're just designating the school as being bad, and you as a parent wouldn't send your kid to a school that was deemed bad. So, and that's the perception in our community, is once you label a school an Apollo school, it just means that you're bad. And we shouldn't be labeling kids to be bad. We should be in the business of providing assistance to them that we get them to the level that they need to be at. But I think the whole notion of just being a bad school, in the sense of just because we haven't met the state standards over years, yeah, I've recognized what the problem is, but it's a deeper problem than just the testing. Is the inequality of funding that's been in the system for too long. And this hasn't been done recently. It's been created over decades. So I think the whole system is broken to where I think because the inequalities exist, we continue to go on this to create the achievement gap. And that's not just me. If you look at the TEA numbers for the last two classes, actually 2010 and 2011, HISD reported to the TEA that 37% of the kids were college ready. 37%. We're talking about 210,000 students now with the new North Forest students. So if only 37% of your kids are ready for college, what are we doing to provide additional services or additional opportunities for the rest of the kids? But out of the 37%, if you even dig deeper into the numbers, on average, 29% African-American Hispanic kids are college ready. But you compare that to Asians and Anglos, which is at 56%. So there's a huge gap between Anglos and African-Americans, where we represent over 87% of this population in HISD, and the Anglos and the Asians. So my thing is, we first need to start really talking about the issues of the achievement gap. It's real. And how do we address it? And the only way of addressing it is providing resources, critical resources, to our neighborhood schools, so we start to teach kids, not just test them, teach them the skills that they need to be successful, either on to college or if they want to go into the workforce. Okay. So, yeah.
Another big thing that's going on within HISD right now, of course, is going to be the design and construction or renovation of a bunch of new schools resulting from the bond issue that was passed in 2012. And did you vote for the bond issue?
Yes, I did. And actually, the meeting I just came from was the Project Advisory Team.
Okay. And so, what's your view of how the process is going at this time?
Well, my issue with the need for our schools is there. That's not a question. My issue with the bond last year, and I voted for it, so, but I expressed to them that this was not enough funding for our schools, our neighborhood schools, first of all. And then the way they did the allocations wasn't fair, because they didn't even bother to even look at the schools. They just assumed based on this random number where they call it a adjusted number. But if you actually went to the school and saw the schools, let me give you a particular example, Jeff Davis High School. When Jeff Davis, when the first round of bonds came out, Jeff Davis, an 86-year school, got $7 million. What are we going to do with $7 million for an 86-year school? Not really, not that much. So I started organizing the community. I started having meetings. We came to the board. We started engaging. And that's never been done in our community. And I think that's what's missing, and not just in our communities, but in every community, every neighborhood's community, that we need to start engaging the process. So after we engaged the process, we invited Leo Bobadilla. He came to our school. He toured. So, and he saw the quite frankly, it was neglect by the school district, that you had mold on the walls. And that's, as a parent and as a community member, that's unacceptable to have kids in that kind of learning environment. So after they saw the engagement and they saw the actual building, they realized that the school needed more funding. So we went from $7 million to almost $47 million overnight. And that's happened in most of the communities. So if you look at the bond, one of the things I do, I look at numbers. I almost interesting how numbers are breakdown. So if you look at the total population that they were calculating, plus the funding, if we average the per pupil allocation, we had someone at the beginning, we had some students were at $10,000 per kid. But then you had some across the town that were $100,000 per kid. So how is that fair and equitable in those communities? So that's always been my issue for me, is the, if we're going to provide a great facility for people either in the Lamar Bel Air area, we should provide the same things here in the North Side, in the Heights, Garden Oaks, Waltrip and Scarborough area. So what's good for them is also good for all our kids here. So, and we need to look at this strategically and see what the needs are first before we start just allocating funds just to allocate funds. So, and I think that's always been my biggest issue. And when I talked to, and I've told Anna this before, that she actually came to our meeting and we asked for information. So in the administration provided just the standard, this is what we're doing. But then if you dig in the numbers, they didn't add up. Because they were saying, okay, we based on this Parsons report. But then the Parsons report didn't really do school visits. So the visits and the numbers didn't match. So that was my biggest issue. And I'm like, okay, so how is it that, where did you guys come up with these numbers? And who... So, and that goes up, I think, to, I don't know to what extent the board had anything, any input, but from my end, as a community member and as an organizer for my community, to make sure that our kids get the best quality public education, it looked bad that we were telling them what we needed, and that should have been the process. They should have come to the community and say, hey, what is it that you guys need? And then within the frameworks, provide some funding. Objective funding, so we can try to address as much as possible. But don't just assume because, well, you have this population of number of kids, and then now this is how much we're going to give you, but you're not accounting for growth. And that's one of the things that I just came from the meeting that we were talking about, is Jeff Davis was only allocated for a max of 1,700 students. You mean to tell me that after 1,700 students, what are we going to do? Where are we going to put the kids? So we didn't anticipate whether, if you create a quality school, a brand new school from the inside, and you create this learning environment where it's a quality education, kids are going to come, and they're going to want to come to our schools. but we didn't take into account the growth in our communities. So I think that's the biggest issue, is that some of our schools are being just topped out at the certain max, and then there's no room to improve. So,
well, yeah. you're talking about funding, of course. Yeah. The legislature, mm-hmm. after cutting many billions of dollars from public education in 2011, restored some of that money this past year. What's your view of HISD's current financial situation, and how do you think it handled the way the legislature has, you know, sort of jerked things around on money?
Right, and I believe the legislature should provide full funding to public education. So the couple billion dollars that they're still going to, that's just the beginning of the problem, of addressing the problem, because the need of Texas itself, we have 5 million kids and students, and over 63% of them are minority kids. So the problem, we're growing as a community in terms of the minority population, so the needs are there. They're going to get bigger, they're not getting smaller, because the, like I said, the achievement gap, it's not narrowing it down, it's actually becoming wider. It's becoming wider because we're not addressing the needs early on in public education. And I think the biggest issue we have as a community is that most of our kids do not read at grade level. And if you can't read at grade level, you can't really pass the STARS test or any test, to be, for that matter. So first, I think we should start addressing the reading issue, which is not reading at grade level, or the mathematics side, where we haven't been engaging enough, I think, kids, where we make it fun for them to understand numbers, and I understand that some students are not going to go into the field, but at least they need to know the basic math and the basic to survive in a city of a global city like Houston. So, and the biggest thing that I said that 37% of the kids are college ready, and 29% of those kids, we're talking about 9,000 kids that we graduated last year. 9,000 of them. So if you apply those 37%, it's about 3,300 students. So what happens to the rest of the students, over 5,000 kids? So are we just graduating just to get them graduating from high school? But then what we're doing is just continuing on the cycle of poverty, because we're not providing them the skills to get a job or to continue on to college. So, and the biggest thing in our community, especially in the Hispanic community, is the we come from low income communities. That's the nice way of saying we're poor. I come from a community, from my family was poor, but I understood the importance of education, of getting educated to move up in life. Every opportunity I get, I tell students and parents and whoever is in the room, is that the only reason why I'm here is because my parents care enough for me to get an education. And I think every parent wants that from their child to succeed in life. And the only way of opening doors for opportunities is through education. So we need to, as trustees, we should be in the business of providing a quality education for our kids, so that they have better opportunities than their parents. So,
you're talking about graduation and college readiness. Of course, one of the other things that the legislature did this past session was make changes to curriculum graduation requirements and standardized testing requirements.
Right.
What's your view of these changes that were made by the legislature?
Well, I agree that the end of course was reduced to 5, from 15 to 5. But I think we should even go lower than that. And I think the emphasis in the state legislature and statewide has this been this overemphasis on high stakes testing as a way of being accountable for public education. And being accountable doesn't mean just testing. It means about everything else, too. It means about, do we have the teachers? Do we provide the professional development for the teachers? Do we have the facilities, first of all, to have a safe learning environment for our kids? Is the board engaging the community enough to let them know what's going on? So everything kind of has to connect together. So accountability doesn't just mean testing whether kids score higher or low. Kids learn in different ways. We just have to find that way for them to learn. And I think as a school system, we should be in the business of providing those different styles of teaching for our kids to learn. So,
As you know, and you referenced it in one of your earlier answers, what used to be North Forest Independent School District has now been folded into HISD, annexed by HISD at the order of the Texas Education Administration. What's your view of how that has gone, and you know, how would you like to see things play out with that?
Right, and I believe that this, of course, the education commissioner sent them over to HISD, so they're part of the HISD family now. So, and I think we should provide, when I talk about providing equality and equitable public education, that means them as well. And many of the issues that they've been dealing with in terms of educating their kids have been the same issues of HISD. So my only hesitation is, in terms of the global perspective, is as a board trustee, I should be able to talk about any school in our district and say, we're providing a great quality education in that school, and kids should be learning. We can't say that now, not in district-wide. We can say in certain areas of the town. And my only thing is, okay, so how do we bring that quality education and those quality facilities to the North Forest area, to the North Side, to the Heights, to the Garden Oaks, throughout? But because I think we haven't gotten there, I think it's going to take time for us to get to that point where we can say, okay, this is what the quality education we're providing them. So I think it's going to take some years for us to get there, and the same issues that they're having our kids and prior to them merging them into HISD was that most of the kids in North Forest were not reading at grade level. And that's because also the same issues of poverty. So that's my thing is that this election is bigger than just whether Anna gets elected or whether I get elected. The problems have been there for too long, and we need to start doing something about actually changing the culture of how this district is. So are we really going to be talking about educating all kids or not? So, and that's, we just have two different ways of going to that end goal. And I think for me, because I've been out in the community and I come from government, I know how to collaborate with people, elected officials, and I know how the system works in order to bring in partners, because it's not just an HISD problem, it's a city problem. And it's a county problem, it's a state problem. It's everyone in the room has a collective interest to make sure that we educate our kids. Because if we don't, we're going to have serious problems down the future. And now that, and I'm sure you read many of the articles, especially the reports from the Houston Endowment, that basically said that kids that start in the eighth grade, and you track them all the way to college, we're at 7%. Between 7 and 8% minority kids finishing, and that's scary, because if only 7 or 8% of them finally get to the goal line of graduating from college, and that's where the need is going to be, because it's still I think a couple of generations back high school was enough. Now high school is just the norm. Now it's going to be a college degree, and if you don't have a college degree, you need to have the technical skills to be at least going through a few years of college to get to a decent paying job. So, and that's going to be the norm. So we need to start preparing. And I know that the legislature, that's part of the thing that they were looking at when they changed the diplomas and making them one diploma where you have career path. And I think we should have been doing that years ago in terms of providing additional options for kids, like training them, getting them an associate's degree to go into plumbing or an electrician or to do something, but at least they have the college skills that if they wanted to continue on, they could go on to college and get a bachelor's degrees or master's degrees or doctorate degree, whatever. So I think that's our goal should be to get all kids to college, whether they choose to continue on to college or go into this career field, they have the skills to be successful. And I think that's what should be the goal.
You know, the subject of education has come up in the mayoral race right. this year. And, you know, strictly speaking, the mayor doesn't have a direct role right. in education, but there are things that a mayor or the city of Houston right. government can do. What do you see as the city's role in education and HISD, and where do you see opportunities for there to be right. more or better work done?
Right. And I agree. I think everybody should engage, whether you're the mayor or the city council member or the controller. I think we all have a responsibility to make sure that we have a quality education, public education. And to the extent that they can provide information, let me give some numbers that, well, some of the stuff that they've been doing that I think hasn't been focused or hasn't been spread out to everybody else. But they have this program called Grow Your Own Workforce. Well, Grow Your Own Workforce means that we have about 20,000 plus employees. And most of our city employees are aging. So we need to start building the next generation of city workers that want to go into public service. So what they're attempting to do is to create these career paths for students, because if they want to be a fireman, or a police officer, or a public works engineer, they need these classes, these college degrees, or certain skill sets to get those jobs. So I think that's an opportunity for us to continue to grow, not with just HISD and in the city, but with ACC, the port, all the different entities. We need to start talking about the overall workforce opportunities for our kids and for the future, and how do we as a education entity start partnering up with them. And I think that's not enough of that happens. I know for HCC, not enough discussion happens between the two boards. And what we were doing is when kids graduate from high school, most of them that do go on to college go through ACC, and they're all taking remedial courses. So, and the discussion needs to be back and forth between the two entities is, okay, what is it that we need to do from our end in HISD? Do we need to start earlier like ACC is doing now from the sixth graders that they're proposing, start getting them in their heads, hey, these are the classes you need while you go through middle school and high school? Because I think part of the issue is once we get to high school and we start addressing, it's too late in high school. Yeah, you can do certain things, but I think the mindset of college needs to be done really early in life. Not elementary, but not in middle school, but elementary, getting them through the whole system of this is the opportunities out there. So, and the sooner we start, the better it is for our future, because then they realize, oh, this is what I need if I wanted to become this.
Well, as you know, there was a group called Early to Rise that was proposing expanding pre-K opportunities. Right. That issue won't be on the ballot. Right. But what was your opinion of that effort? And if it comes up again, is it something you would support?
Well, I think they had well intention by trying to address the need in an early child care programs. But my issue was the accountability process of who's going to do it. And I think that the way it was structured, it was they were going to have these private citizens be the board. And while we have the Department of Education, Harris County Department of Education, which I think they're doing that those services, I think it should have been, I think the Department of Education could handle the providing services. So that was, I think that's, of course, I don't know if it's ever going to get to the ballot or not, but for me, it has to be more, we need to start, if we're going to do something along the way where it's going to be citizen-driven or privately driven, we need to have some accountability issues. And I think when you have an elected body that's accountable to the public, I would go with the elected body over the, because I didn't know the whole details as to how the structure would be and how they would allocate their funding. all that wasn't clear. I didn't see it, so unless they had additional information that I haven't seen, I had some issues with how the accountabilities and who they would report to. And we're talking about $25 million, which is not... It's a lot of money, and it's the taxpayers' money, so I think we need to have the check and balances.
Okay. So. Well, as I say, that won't be on the ballot, but right. You will be. Yeah. So when people go to vote this November, why should they vote to make you the next trustee in District 1 HISD?
I believe we have, like I said at the beginning, I think the issues in HISD they start on November 5th, because the issues have been going on for a long time. And I think when you start electing people that are, first of all, come from the community, understand the issues of what is happening in public education. And I come from HISD. I'm a product of HISD, so a lot of the issues that I had when I was growing up and going through high school are still around. And that's sad, because it's almost been 20 years. And if in 20 years we haven't really advanced that much, there's a problem. And there's a systemic problem. And I think the current superintendent hasn't helped, because he's basically run his district to where it's what he says or no way. So, and unfortunately, the perception in the community is that we have a board that does whatever he wants to. They work for him instead of him working for the board. And that needs to change. We need to go back to the basics of why we elect trustees, which is to represent the people, to make sure that we provide a quality education for all kids, not certain kids, every kid. So, and I bring the passion. I have the experience of government and nonprofit experience of 13 years that I bring to the position. So I've been around in the community, and like I said, in this issue, it's a huge issue that we need to start addressing. And the faster we start engaging the community in this process and engaging it all, the faster we get to the end goal result of educating all kids.
All right, so. Hugo Mojica, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Thank you.